Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, my darling people. I speak to you from the past. It's Sunday, the 21st of November. And I'm walking across the windy green with Jesse and Ray. We're off to the cinema, aren't we, guys?
Yeah.
We're going to see Ghostbusters. That should be cool.
It's a new movie.
It is a new movie, yeah. It should be fun. Yeah, we're not seeing the old one, although that's brilliant. And I greet you at the beginning of, oh my goodness, my 50th podcast. 50! That's absolutely loads. So, so proud and chuffed. What a brilliant thing. Thank you so much for giving me the space to do it. You know how much I loved doing this. Yes, Jess?
I can literally see a kid by himself on his bike.
Really?
Yeah.
He's probably got a parent with him somewhere, darling. Okay. Yeah, he has actually. I can see who this he's with. He does, Jess. Anyway.
No, he does.
Okay, Jess. I see where the people he's with. They're the people walking across the green that way. Anyway, this has been a pretty amazing week. So on Tuesday morning at 9:30, I started my BBC Children in Need 24-hour kitchen disco dance-a-thon. And I'm not going to lie, I was really nervous before I started. Oh, that's the train. Sorry, Richard. He hates it when I record these things outside where it's all noisy. Yeah, I was so, so nervous. I just thought, what if I'm not in the right mood? And I had a bit of a cold, which I know is boring and I know doesn't stop play for anyone. But it's just kind of inconvenient because I felt all snivelly and throaty. But anyway, what an amazing thing. Literally no complaints from me. I felt very... very lucky actually to have that opportunity and so much support and love, you know, just to be able to be part of such a big fundraiser. I've never done anything on that scale before in my entire life, and I honestly wasn't really sure how I was going to feel. It's quite abstract, isn't it, the idea of doing anything for 24 hours with no sleep, but I'm so happy I got to do it dancing, and I kept my love affair with the music and the dance all the way through, so that's good. Obviously genuinely like it, that's a relief. And I had guests come and join me. My brother came with his girlfriend at like 1:30 in the morning. My friend Neris, my friend Lauren, my friend Nikki was with me a lot of it. Richard stayed for the entire thing, which was incredible.
Why did you have the thing on your wrist?
Oh, yeah, Ray still got his wristband, haven't you, Ray, from coming on to meet me at the end. You guys were with me at the end. What did you think of Mummy's dancing?
Good.
Thanks, Jess. What do you think, Ray?
It was okay.
I think that's a comment probably on the quality of my dancing, which I totally understand. Anyway, yeah, I'm thrilled it all went well and very proud I got to do it.
Mummy, this reminds me of my dancing better than yours.
Sorry?
My dancing better than yours.
Oh, Jesse, that was never in dispute. it's funny, we just walked past the charity shop. And they've got some of my old dresses in the window, and I always feel like that's a special compliment. Like, thank you, guys. Glad you like what I gave you. Great. I know, advent calendars. So anyway, if you donated, if you sent me a message, if you tuned in for 2 seconds, if you supported the Dance Done in any which way, I promise I felt the love. And the last count, I believe the fundraiser has done over 1.3 million, which is absolutely insane. How generous are folk? And that's on top of Owain Wynne-Evans' incredible 3.6 million for Children in Need from his Dramathon. So, you know, people have dug very deep because that's two really big things. And I'm really, yes, thank you so much. Just grateful, really. And I can tell you it's gone to a very good place, your money. And that brings me to today's guest. She's Stacey, who is the project lead at a place called Bonnie Downs, a community centre that I visited. It receives Children in Need fundraising. And she is exactly the right person to speak to about all of the above. She's a brilliant woman, really dynamic. You know when you meet someone only briefly and they're really charismatic and clearly smart and forward-looking, positive, whatever. The traffic. So it was an absolute pleasure to invite her over to chat. And now I will share that with you. So we're going to talk you all through, I suppose, living with poverty essentially is a running thread, because Newham, where Bonnie Downs Community Centre is the second poorest borough in the UK. So it's a place that has food banks, has lots of support for the community in any which way, whether it be how to, you know the legal process of being an asylum seeker, being an immigrant, getting work, getting access to benefits. You're here for yourself. And I can only apologise for the bit at the beginning where my brain was... Basically, we recorded this on Thursday, so the day after I'd done the dance-a-thon, my brain not functioning quite. It was like definitely below par. But Stacey was brilliant and informative and... Yeah, just exactly the right person. I'm very, very happy that she came and said yes and spoke to me. So if you have supported Children in Need, you're to hear about what your money is doing at one of the projects it funds. And if you haven't, it's still really good as an eye-opener to how so many people in this country are living. We're a first world country, but, you know, there's lots of stuff not to be proud of and lots of work to be done. Anyway, I will see you on the other side, over to the far more articulate Stacey. Lots of love. See you in a bit. It's really good to see you, and thank you so much for coming to speak to me. I had the idea to invite you to do the podcast, actually, when I met you. And then obviously I asked you a couple of days later. So I'm just really chuffed. And it's nice to see you again. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, honestly, you're thanking me. I should be thanking you after your amazing dance-a-thon that you only finished yesterday. I'm just sitting here worried that you had enough time to sleep and...
Yeah, you know. Well, I've already told you, so I feel like I might as well put it on recording. Yeah. I thought I was really doing really well until about sort of 20 minutes ago when we were chatting and talking about kids and this morning. And I'd promised the children I take them to school. I don't know about your lot, but mine get very keen, especially my 9-year-old and 6-year-old. They always want to know, are you putting us to bed? Are you taking us to school? Those are the two bookends of the day. So I have to prep them. And because I'm on tour a bit at the moment as well, I've been missing bits of that. So I said to them, so long as I can walk after dancing, I'll take you to school on the Thursday morning. Got up this morning, my alarm went up at 6:45, dealt with the 12-year-old, all fine, next two down, got them ready, walked them to school. So I did like an hour of walking, came back. I was like, yes, I'm firing on all cylinders. Chatting to you, and I realised my 17-year-old, I'd forgotten to wake him. So I've just woken him up now. Hopefully he'll come down in a minute. So I've got to write an email to say to the school that I forgot that. So maybe I'm not coping quite as well as I thought.
As we said, you've got a pretty valid excuse, I think, for dropping the ball slightly.
But, yeah, that's definitely what I've done. But you know, what's really funny about the fundraiser, and I totally I underestimated this was going to happen hugely. Because when you're prepping for something... I mean, I've never done anything endurance led at all in my whole life. And so when I was preparing for the dance-a-thon, I was thinking a lot about me and how my body would fare and how my mind would fare and what songs would be playing and how I'd feel at this point. And actually, what was really sort of interesting and extraordinary, and I'm sure like people who've done fundraising would completely resonate with them, is the more my battery ran out, the more I started thinking more about the reason why I was doing it. Mm. And honestly, you and the people I met at Bonnie Downs, they were like right here in my, I could sort of see you in my peripheral vision. And there was a point at about 6:30 in the morning, so I still had 3 hours to go. Mm. But, you know, the finish line was sort of, you know, somewhere in the distance. And I went live to BBC Breakfast and they showed me like a little montage of everything that had been happening in the 21 hours. And I started to feel a bit weepy. And then I started telling them about coming to see you, actually, on there. And I was thinking about the woman that I was speaking to. And you'll have to remind me her name, but she was the lady that was the asylum seeker with the
Larifa.
Larifa. So can you tell me a little bit about Larifa and what the conversation I had with her? Because I thought she really stayed with me.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, Larifa is just such an incredible woman. I mean, when I think of kind of resilience and determination, I just think of Larifa. She's incredible. So
the reason why I thought of Larifa and why I wanted you to tell me a bit about her was because, for me, she summed up the significance of Bonnie Downs, which is the community centre that you're part of in Newham. And I thought the way that she's... The significance of... That's so basically... I'm sorry, my words were coming out in the wrong order. But the fundraising for children in need, Bonnie Downs is one of the projects that receives the fundraising. And when you hear about a community centre, it's actually quite easy to just think of it as terms of, oh, that's lovely that they have, you know, certain things for the community that are going to help people on their way. But you don't really think of it as encapsulating so much emotion and significance of people.
Yeah.
So when Larifa was talking about her journey as an asylum seeker, she was worried about her teenage daughter. Yes. Well, I suppose at the time, maybe she wasn't teenage, but the fact that there was a sort of FGM possibility on the horizon for her daughter.
Yeah.
So she finds herself now in London, in the second poorest borough in the country, with three young children. So I thought, if you could tell me your side of her story, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. So I think you've just kind of touched on it a little bit. So at Bonnie Downs, so you're right, we offer some real practical support. But for us, it's so much more than that. And funnily enough, the best way for me to describe it is we actually had, so you met most of the team when you came to see us. So you met Andrew and Carla and Pear, and we've just had another wonderful local woman, Justina, join us. And she joined on Monday, so we had a team meeting and we're just talking a little bit about the project. And, you know, one of the things that we spoke about was how love needs to almost be the vein that runs through the heart of the project, really. Because if you can't kind of offer that care and that welcome, then the practical stuff just turns you into a bit of a distribution centre. Do you see what I mean? So, and I think, for Larifa, that's what she needed. She needed like real sisterhood around her. She needed people to just really be able to listen to her, you know, to sit, to like hold her hand, really just let her be able to just chat through all of the challenges, all of the things she was really worried about. And as well as us being like, okay, well, let's think about some of the practical bits we can do, it was just about being there as that support, really.
Yeah.
And especially when she is so far from home. And so I think just being able to just be sisters, be friends, be just, I mean, she spoke so beautifully about us. I was just blown away.
She said you were angels.
I know, right? Yeah. And that it was just like, no, you're an angel to us. Just like the fact that you're willing to come and let us share life with you and be part of your life. I mean, she's incredible. She's doing an amazing job. I mean, a single mum raising three children. You know, and unfortunately, she is caught within a very hostile system. Mm. So because she is going through part of the asylum process, she's lived in Newham for 2 years. So again, really journeyed with us and got 24 hours notice to move right across the other side of London.
Yeah, which is just extraordinary.
Yeah, and they can can do that as such, really. And no matter how much fuss we, you know, kicked up in support of her and how much she pleaded, they were like, well, we can still do it. And for her, it wasn't about practicalities of how she was going to get kids to school, nursery, etc. It was the fact that that was her, that was her family, that was her. So bless her heart. Like, when she drops the kids off, she comes and, you know, and she's with us. And because, yeah, that's what's important for her, is just having people to journey with her.
Yeah, and I think you've summed it up really well when you say it stops it just being, it's not just the practical, it's the emotional. Yeah. I guess that's, excuse me, what I was trying to get at really is that when you think of a community centre, you sometimes think of it as like a resource.
Yes.
Like, this is another resource that you have.
Yeah.
But actually, community is really the thing that's the significant part of the of the word, really, you know, the phrase, because community is the glue.
Yeah.
Finding a place to talk to other people, to be with other people. The significance of that. So yeah, I definitely had Bonnie Downs like right there with me.
Oh gosh, we were with you.
Thank
you. Solidarity, yeah.
And Larifa's story is just one story to illustrate something that, you know, there must be many Larifas that you've met along the way.
Yeah.
How long have you been part of Bonnie Downs?
So Bonnie Downs is an exception. So the Community Association was birthed in 1998. And it was birthed by Bonnie Downs Church. So it was Bonnie Downs Church's way. So they've got a very old little building, actually on my road. And they were like, we want to create, as you said, a space and a resource for the community. And so the place that you visited, the Well on Vicarage Lane, that used to be an old drinking club.
Really?
There. Yeah. So I sat in there as a child because on that road, so my nan lived three doors down. So it's really lovely. When I pull up to work every morning, I'm right by my nan and granddad's old house. And so that used to be like a drinking club, and it was abandoned overnight. They didn't pay their brewery fees. And so our church, I mean, I wasn't part of the church back then, but Bonnie Downs Church just said, right, we want to try and claim that building, and got in touch with the council and fundraised. I think they started off with about $5,000 of savings, but the whole renovation was about £500,000 or something.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they had to really pour, you know, their own time and commitment into stripping back that building, knocking walls down, you know, getting what resources they could from local people and fundraising. And so they opened Bonnie Downs in 1998. I came along in about 2012. So I was very aware of Bonnie Downs and went along to be part of the community when I could. But I was working at that point in my life in Hatton Garden in a jeweller's. That was my background. Yeah, that was my background. And then I left there when I became pregnant with Lottie.
Lottie's your eldest.
She is my eldest.
She's 11 this week.
She's 11 on Saturday. So I was pregnant with her when I left my job in Hatton Garden. And I felt that I was really fortunate, really, that I wanted to be at home with Lottie. I also felt I'd outgrown my role a little bit with what I was doing. And and we was in a position where I was able to be at home with Lottie. Matt was working full time. And so I started to go to the toddler groups and things that I'd heard about through the church, this work that, you know, Bonnie Downs was doing. I was able to actually physically be part of it, which was lovely. And skip back about 4 years before that, I was helping out in the Sunday school at Bonnie Downs Church, and someone said to me, oh, you're quite good with kids. And I was like, really? Like, are you sure? And they were like, yeah, why don't you think about... And I'm quite a creative person as well. I like to visually build things. And they said, why don't you look at, you know, maybe doing a childcare course, like if you're thinking that you don't want to be doing the jewellery stuff forever. So myself and my friend Sarah, who's actually now the managing director at Bonnie Downs, we both did a level 4 management in childcare qualification. And I was really nervous about that because I'd left school at 15 with no desire to ever put pen to paper ever again in any kind of study form. But did that. So then, you know, coming back to...
Before you'd had kids that you
Before I'd had kids that yeah. I did it. And so then when I had Lottie and was around in the community, Bonnie Downs approached me and said, well, why don't you and Sarah think about pioneering a after-school club for parents. So again, kind of keeping the ethos of having affordable, high-quality childcare for children to go to so parents could work. Mm. So that was my first role within Bonnie Downs. But around that, Sarah, who I just spoke about, and Angie, they were already kind of doing things like toddler groups and support for parents and children. And so my first role within Bonnie Downs was starting off the after school care. Although literally the first few months even before we'd opened the doors, I found out I was pregnant with my second, with James. And so as soon as I'd started the after school club, I had to hand it over and go on maternity leave, which for me as a mum, I was really cross about that. I was really cross with God, actually. I was like, for goodness sake, God, you know how hard I've worked on this? Like, why would you do this to me? And I really felt God say, yeah, and you thought you were in control of your life, love. Do you know what I mean? So, so I went off pregnant with James. But actually, that worked really well because as I then went, you know, back on maternity leave with a two-year-old and a newborn, I thought, actually, as much as I love being part of the after-school club and working with the children there, I love being around in the community. Mm. And it was around that time as well that Bonnie Downs was launching a food bank in response to the increased poverty within our area. So Angie, who was managing the Children and Families work with Sarah, she became very, very called. So it was when a lot of the changes in government happened and benefit changes shifted, and there were things such as bedroom tax and...
So it's like 2015?
About 2012, maybe. Okay. It was around that time. We opened our food bank in 2013. And it was around that time that the Children and Families Project of Bonnie Downs...
bedroom tax, all that stuff. It's just...
Yeah, all of that kind of came about. And it felt like the Children and Families Project were being really hit by a wave of people not really knowing who to turn to and feeling like... financially, they felt very, very insecure.
Yeah.
So we almost felt like we saw this real wave of poverty happening. And in response to that, Angie kind of naturally moved out of a children and families role and started a support program within Bonnie Downs, which very much focused on food banks, debt advice, welfare support. And I then very naturally moved into her role in around, a lot of the fun stuff at first, really, like the running toddler groups and the craft groups for parents. That happened all with James and Lottie.
And they were still really little.
Really,
so is that project manager? Is that your official title?
So now, now at the moment, I oversee, so Andrea and Carla have moved into that role now as project manager. And we've since then birthed a brand new youth project as well. So I oversee anything children and family like that happens at Bonnie Downs. Because as you saw as well, Sophie, we're launching a new nursery in January. You came to and you saw it. So that's my role really, to just oversee from the nursery, the children and families and the youth. And it's lovely. And I think my favourite part of that, where it would be really easy to be stuck in a room and doing admin and all of the stuff that comes with reports and budgets and things, being with people is what gives me energy. Yeah. So my favourite day is Thursday, which is Family Hub. Yeah.
I remember Family Hub chat.
Yeah, it's my favourite day, for lots of reasons. Yeah, we do get to eat really good food. But so that was actually birthed out of the pandemic, the Family Hub. So when the pandemic hit last March, it feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it?
I know. Time has gone very strangely, hasn't it, in the last 18 months?
Really has. So when we hit that first lockdown in March, so Bonnie Downs quickly evolved because I work for the Children and Families Project at Bonnie Downs, but as I said, we have a support project, we have an over 65s project, we have a gardening project, we have a sports project. So the idea is that we really want to make sure that there is something for everyone within the community to be part of. And so we found that in March, a lot of that we couldn't do. And we evolved as quickly as we could into what our community needed us to be. And that ended up being a food distribution hub. Because around that time, I mean, COVID really hit, didn't it? You had people who were really being told, I mean, we're all being told to stay at home, right? But there were people who literally couldn't leave the home because of shielding. Mm. Like, there were people that were catching it left, right and centre. And so I think we went out doing like lots of deliveries to people's houses with food parcels. And there was this moment actually where there was lots of our team members who had to shield because of, you know, underlying illnesses. There were lots of those who needed to be kind of, you know, sat at home in front of a laptop trying to work out strategically how this worked. And there were people who were actually really poorly with COVID. And then some that had to be furloughed.
Yes.
And I think at one point there was about five kind of paid members of Body Dad staff literally on the ground. And we had our excess stock from the food bank and it really didn't look like anything to look at. And we were thinking, we've got at least 30 families to deliver to. How on earth are we going to do this in our little cars and with what we have? And it was amazing, Sophie. It was people from the community came with bags of food. There were sadly some people who'd, they knew their business was going to go under because of COVID. So they came and donated things like cleaning products and food. We had local hotels who had to shut. And before you knew it, we just had the most amazing hall full of food that we were able to send out to people. And then there were people within our community who got in touch and said, I've been furloughed and I really want to, or I've not been furloughed, or maybe like life has just stopped for me. I really want to be able to, you know, support the community at the moment, whatever ways I can. And we had so many volunteers offering to drive, offering. So people who were even working from home in their lunch break would come and pick up a parcel or two for someone. That's and drive amazing, food out. And looking back now, it feels like a really odd operation. We had to like wash everything because we didn't know. We were learning about this virus together. So we were like washing things and anti-backing things and sending it out. And but alongside that as well, as we said, alongside the practical side of it, I mean, we delivered, I think, to like over 5,000 people. Yeah, between March and whenever it was, March and July, I think it was, March to July. But it was also about how do we keep, you know, we were aware that there are families living in really overcrowded conditions. We are aware of families living in, you know, domestic violence situations. We're aware of people who are just going to be so lonely. So it's like, how do we keep that, you know,
especially in lockdown, I think this is the thing that, you know, for some, you know, whilst you're protecting for the greater good, some in some, you know, very specific situations, it's really very far from what's needs to happen is being stuck at home.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But I was thinking lots of things when you were talking. I mean, firstly, I think it's pretty phenomenal that you left school at 15 with no qualifications and are now doing as much as you do. Have you actually stopped to take stock of that? That's pretty incredible and very inspiring.
Well, I can give you a little bit of story of that, Sophie, actually. So, when I was 15, boys were much more interesting than studying, right?
Yes,
there were so many more wonderful things out there, boys, earning money. And I also, as you know, I said a little while ago, I'm a very creative and visual person, so I love stories. Mm. I cannot do exams. Under any exams, I just crumbled, the pressure.
You're not alone with that. I think that's...
Yeah.
I think that is a standard of how we see if people have learned. It doesn't work for so many people.
That's it. Yeah. And I think that... the only thing I was really good at was English Lit, because it's stories. Mm. I learn creatively. And I remember my English teacher, Mr. Brian, and he knew I was leaving school without going on to college. And this was back in the day with paper forms. And he said, please apply for college, please. But you'll do brilliantly. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going back there. But there was a real regretful part of me of that, because I thought, I can do this, just not in the way that the education system wanted me to do it. And that always stayed in the back of my head, that someone really believed I could do it. And then about, this is where you're going to feel I'm mad. In lockdown, I took on a master's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was the July. So there was something in the back of my mind that conversation with Mr. Brian, it stayed in my head, and that kind of desire, because I do love to learn, just not in an exam form. And there was this, when you keep seeing something and you think, oh, is this a sign? Is this something that, and it was a strand in theology, but humanitarian and social development. So that really links into the work I do. And it was a master's. And I was thinking, look, I barely scraped past with GCSEs. I haven't got a degree. Like, this is foolish. But my sister-in-law, Sally, she's a university lecturer. And she was like, no, I think, like, you're living this master's out. You're doing this in your work. And I think they will let you do it. So this is the University of Manchester. So I had a chat with the dean and did my first pathway. And... I'm doing it. So
That's amazing.
I'm three modules in.
I love
now.
That. I think it's brilliant.
And I emailed Mr. Brian.
Did
I Facebook stalked him.
Yay.
I Facebook stalked Mr. Brian, which is a bit creepy.
I love a good teacher story.
Yeah. And I was a bit like, Mr. Brian, this might sound a bit creepy to you.
I think he would have loved the fact that you remembered that conversation.
He did. He was like...
You only need one amazing teacher, really.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's just someone
absolutely.
Who sees you.
Yeah. And I just said, I've listened to you 22 years later.
it's a long game sometimes.
It wasn't in vain, yeah. But he did say, he's like, wow, that's incredible. Thank you for sharing your story. Do keep me updated.
And then he blocked you.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
He's like, that's so creepy. You never believe some...
Yeah, oh my goodness, yeah. And now he's going to be like, now he's going to get really worried if he hears this. And I just was like, and I'm really enjoying it, because I can do it in a really creative way. And it's stuff that I'm really passionate about. And yeah, so I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I'm going to use this opportunity to be a bit boastful. I got a distinction.
That's phenomenal.
I know. So, yeah.
I don't think that's boastful. I think it's proud. It's good to be proud of what you're achieving. And I think qualifications take on extra significance if there's something you've driven yourself towards. It's not the same as that whole sort of conveyor belt of education and tick boxes and what did you get? I got this. You know, it's very different when it's self-motivated.
Absolutely. And I really do owe that distinction, or any of this, to really, as I said, the people that let us at Bonnie Dan's journey with them, because it's just such a delight to be able to write about those experiences. And it's also really, you know, equipping me, which in turn then equips those that I work with. Yeah, because a lot of the stuff that I'm doing in my master's is around, you know, like intentional friendships and, you know, so...
What does that mean, intentional friendships?
Yeah, so intentional friendships. So I should know, really. I just wrote a whole paper on it. But so it's really about... I think sometimes with charity work as such, there can be this whole thing of... I don't know if I'm really allowed to say this. My, our fundraiser calls it a bit like poverty porn, really. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, oh, this is really... terrible things are happening. And people, don't get me wrong, need to hear that to be able to give. Do you see what I mean? People need to know that there are really challenging things out there and really unjust things happening for people to give. But what we really want to make sure is that we're intentionally journeying with people. We're not kind of using their stories.
I totally understand what you mean.
Do you see what I mean? Using their stories to be like, oh, look at us and the great work that we're doing. And you could do this without you.
Yeah, because also actually, and weirdly as well, that can create a bit of an us and them vibe, which is actually the complete opposite of what empowers. And so much of what you're saying is making me think of the significance of being seen, actually. It's about not feeling invisible. You're not a number... You're not a story that someone can quote as an anecdote of it.
Yeah.
It's the full 360 of what makes you think that you this would never happen to you and what makes you think that person... Because you do see sometimes with people who've led very privileged lives, it's hard to articulate this, but a sense that for some people, if they've led a sort of life that's seen them on a certain trajectory, and it's typical of people who've maybe had... a slight sense of entitlement, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then they end up feeling that there's something about them that is just that little bit clever that means they could they would never have found themselves in that predicament. Mm-hmm. And actually, that is just... The uncomfortable truth is that's just not how how it goes. Mm-hmm. So pulling people out into the light and saying, this is the full story of it, and we're going to be with them, as you say, journeying with them, hand in hand. And it's not just a kind of, seeing yourself in bird's eye view going, look at me doing a good deed right here.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. And absolutely true. And that's what's so lovely. So when you came to our project, it was so lovely on the radio to hear, like, Ashna and Huseifa and Arifa, you know, and Rina telling their story, because it's like, who am I to... I mean, it's lovely to be able to sit here and talk about the work, but for them to tell their stories, it's so like... that's right. You know, who can tell your story better than you, really? So, a lot of the stuff that, funnily enough, you just said that whole us and them thing. Absolutely. That's the stuff that I'm really learning about, because, I don't believe in that us and them thing, and making sure that we are always so intentional about that it is about us as a community and we're journeying this together and we're all valued. And we've all got a contribution to make.
Yeah, and I think actually that point about the contribution is really significant as well, so that people aren't only weighed up insofar as, you know, how dire their situation is.
Yes,
But, you know, actually, you know, if you, what skill set? Where's your time? Oh, you know, you're really good at that. And actually, would you like to get involved in that? And, you know, it's sort of making me think as well about someone else I spoke to called Carrie, who she said to me that the way to help yourself in your mental health is to find a cause bigger than yourself. And actually, I think for people to feel part of something and like they're pulling their weight and they're contributing, is it can't be underestimated. But what's it like for you when you step outside of that and you do go home? And what do you do with that load of those stories and those people you're traveling with when you go back to your life and you're with your kids? I mean, is it something you find yourself, you know, sometimes saying, oh, we can't complain about this, that and the other? Or is it more just, does that have to stop if that's your day in, day out?
It feels like, it does feel like it can be a bit blurred, if I'm honest, because my children in particular have been really part of the community. So they literally do come to work with me sometimes. And you're right. I think for me as a mum, I do have that whole, oh gosh, you know, I'm really, really grateful that they can come and be part of that. And I think it's really healthy that they are. So it was really funny, actually. So one of Lottie's kind of like little job roles would be kind of like helping out within the food bank and stuff like that and knowing all about it. And then when they did community day at school, she got like really commended because the teacher went, oh, she knows where the local food bank is. She knows where this is. She knows about the homeless shelter. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, that's probably because, you know, she's been so part of...
What was the sign she had around her neck?
Play Buddy. That, do you know what? That was really lovely for me to see, really, because they wanted to come to work with me. So, yeah, she'd made that little lanyard, hadn't she? Play Buddy, Lottie and James. And so I think that I try where possible to kind of come home and be mum. But it does sometimes blur sometimes. I think living in such a tight-knit community. So I live where I work, literally, round the corner. So taking the kids to school, I will usually see, you know, people on the route that, you know, are part of Bonnie Downs and stuff. And when the kids were younger, they would be a little bit like, Mum, come on, let's go, stop talking. And I'm like, gosh, it's taken us. But, you know, I think that as they're getting older, they're, you know, I mean, they've always really benefited from being part of that too, you know.
And do they instigate it as well? Do they want to be part
of it? Yeah, so particularly as well, like the youth group and stuff, they love it. They're over at the youth group and things like that. And, yeah, they loved coming to help out in toddler group the other day. They feel like really, you know, grown up and part of it and help her. And sometimes I'll be really naughty and I'll bring home admin stuff that I know they can help me with. So
I think that's naughty. That's pretty.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like give them a little job. We had to send out loads of leaflets during COVID. No, we didn't do that during COVID. We wasn't allowed to. But there was at one point, maybe it was the summer scheme or something, that we had to send things out. So I was like, right, Lottie, you can have the job of writing the envelopes. James, you can put the stamps on. We had like a little conveyor belt going. So they are very, very much involved with my work. But I am also very conscious as a mother that I don't want them to feel that work takes precedent, really. Yeah,
that's tricky, isn't it, as well? Because sometimes I suppose with something that is so 360 and it's, you know, you've got the practical side and you've also got the emotional side, it can be quite easy to sort of, I don't know what the right phrase is really, but to sort of... use that as a way to almost stop engaging with other things sometimes, because when you've got something that's such a big project, you can sort of be just in that world and actually being able to stop and as you say, be mum outside of it, I think is really important. But not as easy.
Yeah, I think the good thing is we've got quite a healthy approach to at Bonnie Downs in regards to just chatting these things through with each other. You know, just having that space to sit and reflect, you know, because it can feel really heavy when you hear stories, you know, like Larifa's, and you know, you'll be sitting there as a fellow human, as a fellow mother, and sometimes the odd tear will fall, and I think again that's quite healthy for people to see that, you know, but also you don't want to fall apart on them and make it all about you either. So, you know, it's kind of that kind of balanced composure of really feeling with people and just being like, oh my goodness. And also at the other end, all the joys and stuff as well. You know, when like really good news is heard and just the being able to like really celebrate together and the high that you get from that.
Yeah.
And so we do make sure that within our teams that we really create that space of almost sharing together and talking it through. You know, my husband Matt is really brilliant at listening to me, just kind of chatting my day through and, you know, whilst respecting people's, you know, confidentiality and things that they don't maybe want me to share further, you know, but still kind of being like, oh, there was this today and this today. Mm. And so, yeah, I'm really lucky to be able to have, people that to kind of share that with. And we're all kind of sharing it together. And part of you just thinks this this weighs really heavy, you know, this feels really heavy, what I've come home with, but actually nowhere near as heavy as what that person is living. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking as well, when you said that the food bank opened in 2013, I was thinking, so you said that Newham is the second poorest borough, but was how long was that? I bet you don't need to know, but was that the case?
It's been for quite some time. It really has been for quite some time, actually.
But yeah. Things seem to be, I mean, that's... That seems like poverty has been getting worse.
It has.
The disparity. And I think,
yeah.
I remember I spoke not that long ago to this lady called Hella Thorning-Schmidt. She was former Danish PM, and then she became CEO of Save the Children for 3 years. And she, I said, how do you deal with that, you know, working for a charity like that where you're seeing such awful things? And she said, oh, because I believe that every day things are getting better for the children. But if you hear that, you know, food banks springing up everywhere, I can't remember the exact percentage, but it's something horrific, like 40% of the UK's children are growing up in poverty. It doesn't, it must feel sometimes that that's not necessarily the journey that we're on.
Yeah, it's, yeah, so you're right. I mean, in Newham, so we were talking about this when you came to visit, in Newham, 50% of children are living within poverty.
50%.
I know.
And that's, by the way, I'm not saying that to discredit what Hella said. It's more, I think it's more a mindset, really.
But she's right. The National, the National is right. It's about something like 37 or 40 or something. Okay. So she's absolutely right. But, yeah, within Newham, it's higher. And the only reason
Every
I know that
child.
Is because...
that's too shocking.
Yeah, I've just done a report, and Jess, our fundraiser, was obviously like, you know, and that was the latest statistic.
And the definition of poverty is it so when you for children it's that they it's either uniform or food on the table.
So it's almost like what we would describe as almost like essentials. Mm. Yeah, essentials. So accessing food banks, accessing kind of that level of support of things such as, you know, uniform banks, clothes banks, etc. I think that, it makes you really angry at systems. Mm. But, yeah, that makes us really angry at systems. But I think you just have to kind of take that anger of injustice.
Anger can be useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
and it motivates you. Yeah, and that's it. And it just kind of has to motivate you, really, to just... for us to kind of just do what we can in where we are. And I think for us, a big movement in our work this year has been, so when the, we were finding, as we said, like lots and lots of families using the food bank, really kind of living in real like destitute situations. And there were lots of families that we didn't really know. But we were kind of seeing the names of these families and we're not aware of them. So what we did is in January, we were able to set up face-to-face appointments with each of these families that were using the food bank. And it was really funny. We were sitting in our old church building in hats, coats and scarves because the heating is just really gone, with the doors open because we had to, with COVID, spraying everything. So it smelled beautiful in there. And we met with every one of them. And I think the most heartbreaking thing was that when they said we've meeting with us as a team, we, you know, you spoke earlier, we spoke about things like, well, what's, you know, what's happening in your situation right now? What do you think can help? You know, if we could go and see Prime Minister together, what would we be saying? This is what we need. But then also asking things like, you know, what are your skills? What are your talents? And what are your hopes for the future? And I think sometimes the system can just make people think, well, just be grateful for what you get. And we're just going to give to you, and we don't really care about you as a person. Like, you just have this and be grateful. And I think what moved, you know, me and the rest of the team was very much how people, well, at first they were a little bit nervous. They were a bit like, why do you want to know so much about us? And we said, well, we want to get to know you and your family. And that was, you know, but that really moved me, and that no one, you know, we want to get the time to know you and your family. You're part of our community. And they'd not really had that. Mm. And we almost uncovered what we said was this kind of underground community of people who just we'd not met before, who just felt that kind of their way of surviving was going to the food bank, you know, and that was it. And so with those questions that we were asking people, like what's your skills, what's your talent, you know, we worked out very quickly that there was lots of people that needed immigration advice. So we partnered with the brilliant, so the Renewal Programme in Manor Park, who were brilliant at letting us use their refugee and migrant project. So the amazing
that advice is just gold dust, really, isn't it? When you don't know which way to turn.
Absolutely. And,
and you taught me some interesting facts, actually, when I met you before about... So if you come here and you're not in the system, you have to be able to prove you've been living here for 10 years before you gain any sort of identity within the system.
That's right.
But obviously, when you arrived here, you didn't have any way in the system.
No.
So how you prove that is a thing in itself.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And I'm just still learning so much about it. So that was amazing. Having Sylvia there with her years of experience was just like, gold dust. And it took them a little while to trust us because as soon as we'd say the word immigration, it would alarm bells would go off.
Yeah, of course.
And we had to rely on the wonderful Sam. Sam, bless him, he's a retired man. So a lot of the people that we meet are from the Malayalam community, so the Indian community, and Sam speaks Malayalam. He's meant to be retired, but he volunteers with Bonnie Downs 3 days a week.
Oh, wow.
I said, your wife must be so cross at us, Sam, you know. But he comes lovingly and he translates. We call him Uncle Sam. So that was it. So we got a translator. We had Sylvia. And so you're right, Sophie. So what we're finding is a lot of people within the Malayalam community were coming here and they were overstaying their visa. And they were almost told that was the way to do it. Mm. And the reason that the majority of them do that is because of education for their children.
Mm.
Because for them, education, you know, back in India is a privilege. And so for them, it's like, okay, well, our children have that that chance. And everyone's story is different. Is different. But I do think that unfortunately for them is then when they come and they overstay their visa, you know, we, under the Children's Act, have an obligation for the children to be in education, and that's great. But I do think for many of them, there wasn't really the level of understanding of actually how hostile that system is for them, actually. So when you do hear that narrative on, you know, within the media, you know, certain politicians standing on the cliffs kind of saying, oh, look at all the boats coming in and everyone's going to stay in a 5-star hotel and... You know, that's really not the narrative that we see. Mm. Actually, it is very, well, almost impossible to get any kind of service as such for those families to the point. So even though the children could come into the school system, the children, when the vouchers would be, when St. Marcus Rashford, I will call him, that man can do no wrong. In my opinion. He kind of pioneered around children getting free school meals and the school vouchers, those children were still exempt from it because the government didn't owe anything to those children, if that makes sense.
Wow.
Yeah. So, So, like, we did a lot of work in kind of, like, ringing around the schools. And that's where you hear the stories of, like, teachers out of their own pockets providing charities, the strain on there, really. And I think that's what it is. So families will come here and they'll be like, my children will get into education. But then they really are doing cash-in-hand work.
Mm.
And obviously throughout the pandemic, that dried up. Things like construction, cleaning, hospitality.
Yeah.
And they're living, you know, they're paying, you know, well, for us in East Ham, London rent, like 700 quid for a box room. And they're paying that and, not being able to do any kind of work at all. So that was really tough. So, you know, that felt like this whole kind of underground community that we were meeting who, you know, felt they had, you know, they had to be hidden because they were so worried about immigration. And we've been able to really, because this, and this was a whole new world for us at Bonnie Downs, a whole new world. I mean, our support project with, you know, the, some of the people that they work with through our homeless daycare centre, I think they'd seen some of that and they were able to guide us. But for us as a families project, it was a whole new world. And we wanted to be able to, as we say, like really intentionally support these families, you know, because, you know, bad advice is worse than no advice, basically. So I made sure that we sought advice from places like Maternity Action, you know, and, you know, just places that really specialise within being able to support families. But then for us, we were able to really offer some of the practical stuff, but then do some of the fun stuff. So we were like, okay, so you're saying you're good at cooking. Let's cook together and let's... So we created Family Hub, which meant that... So it's happening now. Yeah, so they're all there today, actually. It's Thursday. So we'll start off and we'll have breakfast together and all the kids will come, all like the little ones will come and play because the older ones will be at school. And then one of the parents, because we say like a lot of them enjoy different things, we'll do crafts. So like last week, it's rubbed off now, but Shanta, she did henna for us all.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we'll do that. And then what we do is because a lot of the parents there said they really enjoyed cooking or that's what they were good at, we'll have a budget and we'll give that to the parents and then they go and buy the ingredients and then we cook them all on the stove together and we eat together, you know, because that's what families do. You know, the kids play together, we sit, we chat, we have breakfast, cups of tea, we cook together, we have lunch together. And within that, there is some woven, you know, practical support as well. But I think, you know, just being able to just offer that place of... I loved what you said at the end of that Radio 2 clip, a place of community and hope, really. So for people to come, for people for us to just celebrate with each other, for us to just share life's challenges and tragedies together... It's a real privilege to do it. And,
I can see that. I think hearing people's stories and when they trust you with, you know, what's happened to them and with showing where they're strong and showing where they feel vulnerable, it is a big privilege, actually, when people are open with you like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really struck me, actually, because, you know, speaking to the women I spoke to and seeing all the kids together and, I think this is more than just a play group or a cooking group or whatever. It's about all of that the strength and the, you know, those bonds that are woven together. And I think as well, it is still an eye-opener for me. That was the other thing I learned about. So if someone comes here and then they have a baby, it costs them thousands of pounds, they immediately rack up medical bills. Because I think people have a cynical idea that you can come here and use the NHS and this is another thing.
Yeah.
But you were telling me about that as
well. So again, this is things that we're still really learning about. And as we said, we've had to lean into really, you know, amazing organisations such as like Praxis for us is kind of the people like the go-to to talk to about things like this. But yeah, it has to be really life-threatening, like literally your leg hanging off. It's called like really like urgent medical care for them to be able to receive it. But yeah, so for many of them, they come and they have their babies here. And so we've got a little bit, again, it's one of those things where we really try. I think what the parents really appreciate is we have a real culture of fun at Bonnie Downs and it kind of gets all of us through it. So the people that are living it in particular, and so like we have our babies by price tag. So some of the kids that are running around, you know, and we'll be like, oh, there's our £13,000 one. He's the most expensive. You know, there's our £8,000 one. He was a bargain, you know. And the mums, you know, we really love that and we laugh together.
Is the cost of like having them.
Having them. Yeah. Literally, so scans, so maternity care. That's the cost of having them. And when I first heard about that, I was outright. I was like, no way, this is wrong. Surely there's somewhere that, and it's not wrong. And as I said, like Maternity Action were our go-to. And they were like, this is kind of what we're dealing with.
And are these people who are literally not in the system, or is this
people that are not
asylum
in the
seekers?
System.
Is it applied to that?
I'm not so sure. I'll be honest. I'm not so sure about asylum seekers, but definitely those not in the system it applies to. Again, when children need care, so for example, there was like one where one of the mums rang me and she was like, I think I've got to take my son to the hospital, but I think they're going to charge me and I don't know what to do. And I was like, no, take him. And so that is supported under there. The children are supported. So we do make sure the parents know, like, your children are supported. And don't get me wrong, all of the mums that we know, like, any debt, you know, they would pay, you know, their children come first. But it's an added worry, isn't it?
An added worry. Yeah.
I think the most harrowing one we had recently, and again, this is something that I'm investigating with Maternity Action before we think about, and again, this has to be led by the mum, is one of our mums had a miscarriage and was charged for it. That's the most harrowing one that I think we've come across, £4,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And
it's just all these lives being led out there. You just don't even think about these things.
I know. And
that's so shocking.
Yeah. And I mean, what do you say? What do you say? And so it wasn't just that this, you know, very traumatic thing had happened to her and to her family, because she's, you know, she's got children who are obviously really excited about, you know, new baby on the way. Not only has there been that for them to have to manage as a family, she's then very, you know, scared by this very automated, you know, bill that's come through. And so, yeah, rather than her putting an emphasis on, you know, her care, it was very much this worry about a bill. We're investigating that and working out ways around that at the moment and stuff. But the thing is, I mean, when we say that the bill is such, there are ways in which you can work out a payment plan with the NHS. But where it makes it very different, so you're right, what you said earlier is that there's usually like a 7 to 10 year gap in where they say, okay, well, after this amount of time, you can apply to kind of become a resident here. If you have a debt over £1,000, that goes against you as well. So like if you're given like a 13 grand maternity bill, you've got to hope you can pay that off in by the time you, and for most of these families, that's not gonna happen because they're already struggling to pay rent and for food and things like that because the jobs are so unstable because it's kind of cash in hand stuff.
Just as a contrast, if you are if you want to have residency here and you have the cash, if you spend 2 million in property and above, you get automatic You get residency in the UK, just as a contrast.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
I don't think it's something a lot of people know, but that is the case.
Yeah, so you can just buy your way into
it. You can, yes, yes.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
No,
actually.
It's not a big shocker, is it? It's not like you better sit down for this.
Yeah, gosh, that doesn't surprise me, to be honest. But yeah, it just shows, doesn't it? Yeah.
So just out of curiosity with you, in your masters, is there a part of you, when you talked about the anger and the sort of fuel on the fire, is there a part of you that's sort of equipping yourself for some being able to get a bit more involved in sort of, I don't know, lobbying or anything like that?
Have
you got a bit of you that's curious about?
Yeah, I think curious is a really good word,
actually. Because you're clearly quite formidable, and I can see that there's like a bit of a trajectory this way. We're sort of heading to, I'm just thinking if you're thinking in those terms or if it's just sort of unveiling itself to you as you go along.
It's really funny, isn't it? Because when I kind of spoke to people about doing the masters, and it's really lovely because there's a few people kind of from the Bonnie Downs community who I'm doing it with as well. So that's lovely. Johnny and Jess and Ali are doing it as well.
Well, same masters.
Yeah.
Oh, so it'll cool.
Well, some of us end up doing like different pathways, if that makes sense. So that's been really good to kind of journey it with them. But I think the first question a lot of people asked was, are you doing this for a career move? Like, is this why you're doing this, to kind of like put it on your CV? And I'm like, no, I've not I'm not very good in kind of career aspirations as such. I'm just really, you know, this way of life, and you know, I think that's where it ties into my faith as well. This way of life really intrigues me, you know, and it really intrigues me. I really love living this way in community, and I just want to learn more about it, maybe how other people do it. As I said, I love reading stories. And also some of the other side of it, like learning a little bit more about maybe other communities' experiences and challenges that they face and using their learning. So, it is a real discipline for me as well because I'm such a fidget. So to have to sit down and do reading lists and things like that and books that, and if I ever read, it's complete escapism reading. Mm. It's not, you know, deep. Mm. Theological kind of reading. So yeah, I do have to have a real discipline about that. But yeah, no, a lot of the stuff is the kind of stories that I'm really intrigued with and learning more about other projects and
sort of growth, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't need to always know where you're headed with these things.
No.
I think, you know, you've already learnt that, you know, you can live a life where it just kind of and then you see the next bit you're going to and then the next bit you're going to. Yeah. You don't have to have a kind of everybody's real eye on the prize. Yeah. In fact, I think most people aren't. Mm. I think it's, you can just sort of let your life unfold and surprise you sometimes, which is really nice.
I mean, if you'd have told me 2 years ago, you're going to do a master, I'd be like, don't be so. That's ridiculous.
Or even when you were having your first baby, if you knew where you'd end up a decade later, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been such an adventure. Yeah, I feel really blessed to do it. Yeah.
And I suppose with your faith, that comes down to community a lot too, doesn't it?
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Because I think that for me that is faith. So we call ourselves a blurry edge church. We're a real inclusive church and don't believe that church is something you do together on a Sunday, that it's like this formal structure, like church is in the everyday, like church is in our food bank on a Wednesday, welcoming in, you know, people from all walks of life. So I told you that story, didn't I, about Lottie with the street drinkers.
Oh, yes, you told me when I saw you, yes. Which means you're going to school with your mum.
Yeah, so my mum had her. So we have... we have, as I said, like Bonnie Downs is just a complete place for anybody. We're really inclusive. And yeah, we usually on Wednesday, because we run our food bank and a free community lunch, we'll get some of the local kind of homeless people or people like the street drinkers, really, who come and have a hot meal and a coffee to sober up and stuff. And yeah, when Lottie used to... when she wasn't at school and would be kind of part of the food bank, she'd be like with her Nana Ellen on the counter helping make the teas and stuff like that. And... my mum, took her down the road one day and some of the guys in the park were like, "Hey, Lottie." And my mum was, you know, a little bit like, "Oh, who are these, you know, men sitting, you know, on the bench with their cans of drink?" And she's like, "Oh, they're my mum's friends." And my mum was like, "Oh, right, okay." But I loved that. I thought... you know, that was a real proud mum moment, actually, that she said, "Oh, not... you know, they're people my mum works with. They're my mum's friends." I thought that was lovely. And I think that that's it as kind of in regards to like my faith in the church. And I think that, for me, so the church that Bonnie Downs is a Baptist church. And for me, Jesus was all about people, all about being with people. And that's what we do. And I think more than ever, I think, for us, I do a lot of work in the summer with young people. So we run a youth development program at Bonnie Downs. And we employ local young people. So this year we had, I think we had 45 young people aged between 15 and 22. And we employ them or give them volunteering opportunities, and they plan and lead the 3-week summer scheme. And so Children in Need pay for some of their children to come along to that summer scheme, and they pay for some of the young leaders' time and work there. So it's a really, as you said, it's like a really 360 thing. So it gives a lot of these young people an introduction to work. It gives them a purposeful summer.
Mm.
And there's some kind of mentoring and training opportunities in it. But it also provides a really amazing 3-week summer fun program for young people. And I think I'm very aware that myself and my job share partner, Sarah, you know, we kind of come with that label of Christian and Christian organisation. And we feel that, well, we know what sometimes that tag can come with. That tag of Christian can come with being judgmental and having certain views about things. So for us, we feel that for us, it's making sure actually this is, we want to make sure that everyone feels included. We want to make sure everyone, you know, is welcome, really. So we kind of spread that message. And so we'll do things like, as I was driving here, actually, it was down the Pride route, because we'll go to Christians at Pride. Cool. When we can. And I never want a young person to not be able to talk to me about their sexuality or any, you know, maybe decisions that they've had to make around certain things, because they think, you know, I wear that label Christian and that we'd be judgmental.
I think actually that goes back to what I would call sort of the actual the sort of heart of what Christianity is supposed to be about, rather than maybe, as you say, the sort of place where it ended up in terms of its sort of, you know, profile. I think we've moved beyond that with what's how people are really living their lives with those values, I think.
And I think it's about leading intriguing lives. Like, for me, with my faith, I think, oh gosh, like, Jesus was this really radical man that led like this really, people were so intrigued by him, and that's why they followed him, not because of a bunch of rules. And it was my mother-in-law that intrigued me into Christianity, because, so my husband, me and my husband, Matt, and so we've been together nearly 21 years now.
Oh, wow.
I know. And we lived with his parents for about 5 of those years to save up to buy our own home and stuff. And my mother-in-law, Ellen, she pioneered the Over 65s project at Bonnie Downs. And so I'd come home from my job in the city with diamonds and all of that kind of wealth and stuff around. And I remember coming home and her with an elderly person in the area who was kind of quite an outcast. Like, no one really kind of wanted to hang around her. She, bless her, she had quite severe learning difficulties, and people weren't very kind of kind to her. And Ellen made sure that she really took, you know, was like, no, like, this woman is loved, and I'm going to make sure that she's part of a really thriving community. And she had her, she'd caught head lice, the woman, and she was de-knitting her over our bath. And I've come home and Ellen's like, wow, and I was like, what on earth? Yeah. What on earth is this woman doing? She's complete bonkers. And another time where she was like, don't put anything in the washing machine because so-and-so's bed bug sheets are in there. I had to go and de-bed bug their house. And I was like, this woman is completely mental. Like, what is she doing? And she just led this real intriguing life.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, where does that come from?
Yeah.
And from her, it came from her faith. And anyway, long story, she invited me to church. I started to learn a little bit more about Bonnie Downs and kind of grew in my faith. And
so that's quite a significant thing, really.
Yeah.
So how old were you then?
21. So I was 21. I think that's what we're kind of called to do, really, just have that like intriguing lives.
A life less ordinary.
Intriguing lives and what that means, really.
I think it's just really healthy as well to keep looking outside yourself. Other people's stories are fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my gosh, yes. Other people's stories are incredible. Absolutely. And we get to hear so many. And that's what I mean. We just have such, you know, it's just such a privilege to hear them. at Bonnie Downs. It really, really is, to just hear people's stories and for them to trust us with them as well. And, you know, we do keep, I mean, funnily enough, Sally, who's our pastor at Bonnie Downs, has wrote a book, Looking for Lydia, and it's all about kind of Bonnie Downs stories, and it's everything from giving... as I said, because we have friends from all different walks of life, and going over to our local park and doing communion with the homeless people, and one asked if their dog could have communion. So she's like, I've never been asked that, but okay. You know, lots of stories, really.
Well, I think you're a good advert for all of the stuff you're talking about as well, because throughout the whole time we've been speaking, there's lots of joy about you, Stacey, and I think, you know, that radiates from you in every pore, and also all your clothes. I mean, I've only met you twice, but both times you've been... the first time I was wearing rainbows, your rainbow cardigan. And today you're covered in pink flowers and bells on your ankles, which is pretty impressive. Brightly coloured trainers. And you also brought with you a costume change, which I can only applaud.
It's because I was so jealous of all of your ones yesterday.
You're like, check me out. And actually, the thing you brought with you is a rainbow dress, which I presume has been with you on the Pride run. Which says, is it love always wins?
That's
a good slogan, I think.
Love always wins. Absolutely. Love always wins.
It's a very powerful thing, isn't it?
You know, and it goes back to kind of what I said when we had our, you know, we had our little team meeting Monday, is that that's got to be the vein that runs through the heart of it, really, is love. And
it's not everything. Like, these people, things need to change in this country. We're a first world country. I'm not trying to be twee about it.
No, not at all.
It is the thing that pulls people along and motivates.
Yeah.
And actually, that thing you were talking about earlier with the anger you feel, that comes from love as well.
It does.
Wanting things to be better for people because they deserve it and you care about them.
It does. It absolutely does. and that can be really difficult. And I think that, you know, I think we'd all say, you know, at Bonnie Downs that we never want it to look like a Disney movie, that like people come to Bonnie Downs and we all journey life together as like this really happy family and amazing things happen in people's lives and we all celebrate together. And that does actually happen quite a lot. But there's also real sadness in certain things, and there's also real chaos in people's lives as well. And I think that can be really tough, because no matter sometimes how much, and this is just generally a life lesson really, isn't it? No matter how much you love someone sometimes, the chaos can take over, or past experiences can take over. And that's why, you know, we spoke a lot about we do things with people, not for people. Because there are some people that you meet and journey with who you kind of want to be a bit of a mum with and be like, well, if you do this and if you do this and if you do this, then everything will be better. And, you know, like a bit like Jamesy used to have that one of those little backpacks that you hold the reins on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you kind of feel like you want to be like, well, you know, it's really, that would be quite a dangerous move, but I might have to watch you kind of do that and see things fall apart. And that can happen too, you know. You have to kind of, you know, live within the chaos as well sometimes. And love calls you to do that, doesn't it? It calls you to not only do all the good stuff and the good celebrating and all the lovey-dovey stuff, it's to kind of be in the chaos a little bit as well. And we talk a lot about grace and truth a lot. So sometimes there are situations where we just have to be really truthful about, not judgmental, but truthful and honest about, but then just show, you know, love and grace as well, really. Like, you can almost kind of see the chaos coming sometimes. You feel, oh, please don't do it, you know, but they will. And yeah, you just kind of love and do what you can and be honest, but gracious at the same time. And yeah.
And sort of finally, from your vantage point, is there something that you could see that could be changed that would actually make things significantly better, just generally for how the situation that we're in with this illness?
I mean, I'm aware not to get too political and stuff, but I do think, so when we asked those families what could make your situation better, for a lot of them, it was to work. So I know that there is this narrative of people that say, oh, there's people that just come and scrounge off the state and they just want to kick back and get what they want. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are the odd few people out there that quite would fancy to do that. But that's not the narrative that we see. And I think that, yeah, I think if there was better access for people to work, because even when people sometimes get like their no recourse to public fund status, some of them are still not allowed to work as well. Oh, so wow. Do you see what I mean? So I think that it's, yeah, so like Larifa at the moment will not be allowed to work. She cannot work while she's going through this process and stuff. So
right.
I think, but for so many, they don't want to rely on handouts. They want to
their
be able to make
purpose is good. Purpose
yeah,
is
yeah,
good.
Yeah. They want
being part of things is good.
Yeah, they want to work and they want to contribute.
Earn your own money and
earn their own money, and you know that's what people want. So I think if there was a better access to work for people, in the, you know, within this kind of immigration system. I mean, I'm by no means an immigration expert or anything like that. I'm just going by stories I hear and training that we hear. But better access to work earlier on.
I think it's a brilliant point, actually. And, you know, I think making things political is totally acceptable from my point of view anyway.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we were in our lockdown situations, you know, a Conservative said, no, okay, now you can have your cleaners back, you can have your childcare back.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not an immigration expert,
yes.
but in my life, a lot of the people that end up in those roles are people that, you know, maybe weren't born here or are, you know, first generation born here.
Yeah.
And that's actually the glue, you know, and that's what's providing us all. Like when I was dancing for 24 hours, our amazing au pair, Jelena, who was born in Serbia, then was a refugee and went to Spain when she was 8 and then came here. That's who was looking after my kids. Access to work is really important. And you don't just want to be grateful for your hand out of the food bank. You want to be able to do things. And that's why things like Family Hub on a Thursday, everybody's cooking together and talking. And people got loads of strengths. Let them use it.
Yeah.
They like it. It's good for everybody. Enjoys that feeling.
Yeah. And we always want to make sure Bonnie's Downs as well. So, I mean, I've lived in East Ham all my life. So I've seen it really, the area, you know, through a real, when I was a child, it was that very much like Cockney, East End kind of really, really working class area. And then our borough became much more diverse. And now we, again, kind of like the gentrification and stuff, we've got people that have been like outpriced by places like Hackney and Tower Hamlets moving in to Newham because it's more affordable. But when I say affordable, it's like $400,000 or $500,000 to buy a house.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it's more affordable to buy there. So we have a real mix of people with money and those living on or below the breadline. So Bonnie Downs, that's why, you know, of course we have, you know, community lunch and food banks, and that is providing a service, but we make sure that, you know, everybody's welcome. So our toddler groups, it is a real mix of everybody. And when we do things like, what one of my best bits about toddler groups is when we do clothes swaps. So if we, instead of maybe taking clothes to the charity shop, we'll bring clothes to, and then we'll like share them, and it'll almost be like going shopping together. So we'll be holding them up against each other going, oh, that will fit you, that will look really nice. And Larifa was really happy, actually. She got some really cool like stiletto heels the other day. And I was like, Larifa, check you out, like, where are we going out type thing, you know. And and that's it, you know, it's kind of doing these things together really. I've got some great bits from those clothes ones. And I'll be like, Stacey, this will look nice.
Well, actually, I've got
you.
Something I can give you. I've got a sort of leopard print lycra catsuit that
there we go.
So I'll fish out here.
I'll wear it to work on Monday.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Oh, Stacey, thank you so much. Honestly, I think you're I'd want you in my corner for anything. And I also find your story, I think it's really inspiring to think of 15-year-old you and where you are now. That's just, I love that. It's brilliant.
And you know what, though, Sophie? It is all, you say about like, having me in your corner, and that, you know, again, the reason that I can do what I do, what I'm privileged to do, is because of all the people in my corner. Do you know what I mean? And it really is such, yeah. Bonnie, it is like working for a family. And I know that sounds really cliche, but it is. And it's lovely. Like our MD, Sarah, is just brilliant. She used to be my job share partner. And she's great. She's not your... She's so people focused, and so like she's got obviously quite a lot of work to do, but she sits in the office with us all. She doesn't shut herself away. And at summer scheme, she'd come over every Thursday and just make tea for all of us. She just powered us with tea and chocolate, and she's just so people focused. That kind of like people before process. We talk about that a lot. People before process. And at Bonnie Downs, believe it or not, we have a rainbow org chart. Instead of like your average one, and the big red arch is all of the people that work kind of on the ground. So like our cleaners, our volunteers, all of those that really arch over and make our project run. And then Sarah is like the little purple right at the bottom. Rather than, you know, usual org charts, it's like right the big boss at the top and that. And I think kind of through her leadership and through her friendship and love, that it's so easy. Do you see what I mean? When you've got someone like that in your corner.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. That's actually really, really important. I think
your
kids are going to grow up with so many life lessons that don't have to be pointed out. They're just part of how you live and how you think about things. I mean, perspective is vital, actually. And once you feel like you've got that support, it just lifts you up, doesn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was talking to Claire earlier about my daughter Lottie, who is 11, going on 22. And I said, that's the thing, isn't it? Like one of the things with both of them, actually, Lottie and James, like Lottie in particular, as a girl, you know, really knowing her own mind. I'm like, I want to raise her to be like an independent, fierce young woman, except when I have to parent her.
But then you find sometimes when she's being that independent, fierce person, you're sort of slightly rooting for her. It's quite hard to argue against it because you're kind of like, go on.
I am. And then I'm kind of like, I just think, okay, we'll get through this, but I will love this. I mean, I do love it about her now, but like in years to come, you know, yeah, this will be worth it. The determination for her to argue with me. Hopefully she'll be using it in Parliament, you know?
Do you think your parents said the same about you?
Well, funnily enough, my dad does give me this look and be like, oh, I wonder where she gets it from. And but they do say I was the middle child. Well, I am the middle child. And they do say, like, I was a nightmare. They say you were such a nightmare. And now
I've got three of them.
Oh, but if this gives you hope, they do say like, and now it's, yeah, now who would have guessed it? Like church leader, social justice campaigner.
Well, do you know what I call my middle child? I call him the heart of the family.
Yeah,
my actual
that's
middle,
lovely.
Right in the middle. So maybe that was you as well.
Maybe. My dad probably didn't think that when I was coming in as he was going to work.
It's a long game, parenting, I'm telling you.
It is.
So there you had Stacey Cordray, the project lead at Bonnie Downs Community Centre over in Newham, East London. And that marks my 50th guest, which brings us to the end of series 5. Wow, 5 series. Woohoo! I'm doing an air punch here on the high street near where I live, much to my children's horror. I want to thank all of you for, you know, being so supportive of the podcast. I read all your comments, everything. The podcast is a proper pet project, you know. It's a passion project born out of pure love. I'd do it no matter what. I'd do it if it was like 2 of you listening. So the fact that there's a whole community of us is brilliant. I'm sure I'm repeating myself, but with every guest, I feel like I'm adding another person onto our desert island. Got quite a formidable team here now of women, strong folk, bright women who can handle anything on this spinning place island. We're nearly there, Jess. I'll be back with a new series in the new year. I've already got some brilliant guests lined up. I'll keep working hard at getting you the best folk. I know I've been very spoilt already, but hey, still loads more voices to be heard. In the meantime, big thanks to Claire Jones, my producer and friend, for her support. Hold on, sweepy. To my husband, Richard, for becoming the editor, even though it was never his decision in the first place, but there he is. He stuck it out. Thank you, darling. And to Ella May for her beautiful art week on week. So artwork week on week. And thank you to you. It's your ears I care about. Thanks for letting me rattle around in them for a while every week. Sending you lots of love. If I don't speak to you before, which I probably won't now, have a wonderful Christmas. Jessie, is there anything else you'd like to add to the listeners of Spinning Plates podcast? You can have a think if you like. Is there anything? Oh,
I know.
You can say Happy Christmas if you want.
Subscribe to your channel.
Oh, subscribe. That's sweet. Yeah, we can do that. Like and subscribe.
To Mummy's channel.
On podcasts, Jessie, they do, like, on podcasts, you do, like, a little five-star review thing. Maybe they give me a good review there. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the support, Jess. Is there anything you'd like to say to the Spinning Plates podcast listeners? Do you know what the podcast is about? It's like working mothers.
I have a good one.
Oh, yeah?
I have a good one.
You can just say Happy Christmas if you want.
I have a good one.
Yeah.
Comment what song you liked, what Mummy danced to.
Oh, that's sweet, sweet. Yeah, I like that. Cool. All right, you can just say bye.
Bye.
There you go, yeah. Not really my demographic, it's fine. All right, darling. See you soon, my loves. Thank you so much for everything. Have a peaceful time with us. Love.